Hello, America and the world. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Folks, this is a call-in show, and our topic is healthcare. So please call in with your questions at 1-800-313-9443. Let me repeat that for you. That's 1-800-313-9443. So today we have an exciting show. First off, I'm going to introduce a new special commentator, Miss Megan O'Toole. Megan is a graduate student in English at Pittsburgh State University in Kansas. What caused me to invite Megan to be one of our special commentators is that she is homeschooled and is a graduate of Mises University in Austrian economics, which, as you know, we call reality economics. Thank you, Megan, for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Great. Now, our special guest today is Mr. Jake Towne. Jake is also a graduate of Mises University. He is a chemical engineer by training, who is currently running as an independent for the U.S. congressional seat in the 15th District, north of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Folks, I asked Jake to be on the show because I was very impressed with his written positions on monetary reform and on the healthcare debate. The initial focus of the show is going to be on healthcare. So, Jake, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Michael. Thank you for having me on your show, and hello, Megan.
Hello.
Great. So, Jake, we're all in agreement that we want to see healthcare be accessible, affordable, and of high quality. The question is, how do we go about doing that?
Exactly, Michael. And I actually have gone around the district and have been talking to lots of folks on kind of both sides of the issue. And you have people that are pretty much just against the current plan from President Obama. And then you actually have the Republican plan. And actually both of those are no good in my view. All they are for at the end of the day is more government control of healthcare and more bureaucracy on top of everything. I believe that the answer lies in the free market and getting the government out of healthcare. They're already in too far.
Okay. Well, you know, I noticed that your plank, you start off by making the point that the general welfare clause of the U.S. Constitution states that the government should promote the general welfare, not provide the general welfare. You know, could you briefly expand on that point?
Well, absolutely. A lot of folks, actually, that is something that if someone's studying the Constitution, it's one of the questions that they have. And general welfare comes up in two spots in the Constitution, in the preamble, and then I don't have a copy of the Constitution in front of me, but it does come in one more time, I think actually when they're talking about taxes. And really what it comes down to is it's, like you said, promoting, and that's the key word, and it's also the general welfare. And what it doesn't say there is individual welfare. So it doesn't mean that, you know, the state exists to help you out. And if you are the average American, the state really isn't helping you out. And then the other point that I like to make is this is also the main crux of it is actually in the preamble. And that, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you say, you know, okay, general welfare and then not list, you know, there's nothing more natural than just stating and elaborating upon what is and what constitutes the general welfare and how Congress works. So if you go to Article 1, Section 8 in the Constitution, I believe there's about 12 or so clauses that detail exactly what Congress is allowed to do. This is the Federal Congress. And the Federal Congress just has no mandate whatsoever to do anything with health care. And I talk with people about this all the time, and there's actually quite a few more arguments than just the Constitution. But what I answer to folks, and it's really unanswerable.
Well, let me interrupt you right here, Jake. We're going to break for just a couple of minutes, and we're going to come on back and have you discuss more about how you think health care is not the duty of government. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back right after the break. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and we'll be back just after the break. Stay with us. Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hi, there you are. All right. Okay. Okay, so we are back. and this is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and with me is our special guest, Mr. Jake Town, and our special commentator, Ms. Megan O'Toole. So, Jake, you were just talking about how you would like to get the government in general out of healthcare, and you were mentioning that it was not the duty of government to provide the general welfare, but basically to promote the general welfare.
Correct.
So, can you talk more about that?
Sure. The role of government really in our healthcare is to provide a framework of laws for a competitive free market, not to actually run healthcare and provide it to people. And I guess on the last point that I was just talking about on the Constitution, it's not in the Constitution. This is unconstitutional. And when I get into conversations with people, the one thing that kind of stops them a lot is I tell them that that's the contract. And when they say, well, you know, you should be, legislating on health care, I say, well, you know, what is the limit on government? If you want to add an amendment, go ahead and try. But there's no limit on government without it. And there's really no reply, because if what is the contract with the people then?
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that you have a desire for young people that should have the option of opting out of healthcare.
Right, and it's a sensitive topic, and you have to take a look at some of the facts. And if you go into my website, the Medicare is actually at $85 trillion in unfunded liabilities, $85 trillion. It's pretty much, it's broke. Social Security really isn't much better. I believe the number is 17 trillion, and this is trillion with a T.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks actually have trouble understanding how large it is, and same thing with myself.
Mm-hmm.
To get out of something that's going bankrupt and to open things up to the free market, really what I think should happen is you basically make it an optional program. And the younger generations are basically closed out, and they have plenty of time to recover with their lives. And the older folks, there was a social contract made with them. They put money in. They put certain amount of purchasing power in. And I believe that that needs to be upheld as best as possible. And the area in between will have to work out some type of phase out. So eventually. But see, what politicians need to have and what Congress needs to have and what the American people need to have is they need to have a vision. And my vision is just have the end of the welfare state.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have that, we'll be much, much better off. We'll be a lot healthier, we'll be a lot wealthier, and government will be a lot smaller.
So basically, you're saying that centrally controlled healthcare is an unsustainable kind of idea.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the same carries out. People bring up, Canada and Europe and all those, and it's no different for them. And the reason why it actually goes back to what Ludwig von Mises wrote in Human Action. And what happens there is, like, when you give monopoly over to the state or to any one particular company, what ends up starting to occur is you have price signals getting destroyed because no one knows what anything else costs.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, and very quickly at the same time, you have your profit-loss mechanism break down, and then you don't really know, where are you going to provide care. And so for the government to provide care, what they always have to do is they always have to ration it. They always have to have price controls, period.
So let's back up for a minute here. Because I know that you mentioned in your plank, which I think is really excellently laid out, that there's two ways to allocate any good or service. And one way is via price, and the other way is via government imposition. Let's talk about price first. Why is price better?
Oh, sure. Let's take the case of a very expensive medical procedure that only, Bill Gates can afford. Under state-run care, he really won't really have that type of option. But under a free market, he would plunk down however many millions of dollars necessary for it. And after you have more and more of these surgeries or whatever it happens to be, what the free market dictates is you get cheaper costs and better quality. That's always what happens anytime free market principles are being followed.
So in other words, prices are basically signals. And prices, and because prices are signals that consumers respond to, prices basically regulate both supply, demand, and do they regulate quality as well?
Well, it's all tied all hand in hand. I mean, what the prices do is they allocate resources. So, you know, like if you're doing kidney transplants, you need a supply of kidneys somehow. And so I would say yes, like the prices are basically the best way to allocate the resources in a society. Because what we really don't have is, what we don't have is complete abundance of everything for everyone. We live in a society that has scarcity. And as long as that scarcity exists, we need to follow, like you said, you either have it implemented by force and through coercion or through the free market. And the free market is always what's going to give you, again, cheaper costs and better quality. You'll get the exact opposite from government-run systems. You'll get worse quality, and you'll get higher costs.
And you're going to get fewer choices, and you're going to get rationing because there's going to be a combination of both government mandates and restrictions.
Oh, absolutely, and we already have those in a lot of places. And, you know, when I have this conversation with folks, one of the first things I end up telling them, particularly someone who's for the government-sponsored plan, is, well, they need to understand that, and I don't totally agree with this, but this is a fact, like the EMTALA Act of 1986, anyone, and actually right now it also applies to any person inside the United States, whether a traveler or a legal immigrant or an illegal immigrant, and go into an emergency room and get the care that they need.
Uh-huh.
It might not be perfect, but that's how it's done, and it's done at a loss for the system, but the state forces those things. So what ends up happening is, like, for instance, in the Southwest, you have emergency rooms closing for even normal citizens to use just because the costs have become so high. But what you also have on cost, I think there's actually four things. One is actually the state mandates. Like many states, they add little mandates into each premium. In some states, it's pretty ridiculous. Like say Iowa, a lot of these states actually have premiums that you pay for hair extensions. Or if you're a male, you may be paying a premium for ovarian cancer. So these actually add up quite a bit. So like 18% to 40% of your premium are for, and you can review these lists yourself, I'll put a link up, it takes up about 18% to 20%, 40%, depending on the state that you live in, of your premium.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The second thing is actually tort reform. And in Congress today, they talk about tort reform and they give it some liability on the federal level. But really, the federal government has nothing to do with contract and liability law. The tort reform should really be undertaken on the state level, which is their responsibility to establish that legal framework.
Yeah, explain for the folks at home what tort really means.
Sure. Like, for instance, if you go to the hospital and you tell them that, you have a problem with your right arm and needs to be amputated, and they cut off your left arm, you would have a pretty straightforward case that they committed negligence in some manner.
Okay.
Of course, there's also frivolous lawsuits that society also needs to protect itself against, like, for instance, like the McDonald's with the hot coffee and that type of thing. So what ends up happening is these doctors pay absurd amounts, usually sometimes a half of their salary, for malpractice insurance to protect themselves.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, but because they're always worried about being sued, they undertake what's called defensive medicine. And what defensive medicine is just tests that the doctor believes are unnecessary, but are done as a precautionary thing, just so that he covers all his bases. Then, when you talk to these doctors, a lot of them are actually frustrated about it. They like to they like to treat the patient and get them out of the door as quickly as possible, but instead they kind of need to protect themselves and move ahead at a bit of a slower rate sometimes than they normally like.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that it's a pretty significant cost, and it's hard to put numbers on these things, but the estimates that I hear from folks is anywhere also from 20 to 40%, another 20 to 40%.
You know, I want to go back just a minute, Jake, and you mentioned that government intervention basically equates to rationing, higher costs, longer wait times, fewer choices. Why would all of these happen? And I'm going to turn to Megan. Would you comment on that, Megan?
Well, first of all, I would like to go back to something I was reading that Jake has posted before I answer that. And he does have a quote on his open letter to flag@whitehouse.gov, and it says, "You cannot legislate the poor into freedom by legislating the wealthy out of freedom. What one person receives without working for, another person must work for without receiving. The government cannot give to anybody anything that the government does not first steal from somebody else." And I think that that's food for thought.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Well, actually, we're coming up on a break. And so what we're going to do is we're going to pick up this exact topic, and we'll start with you, Megan, right after we get back. This is Radio Free Market. I am your host, Michael McKay, and I'm with Megan O'Toole and Jake Towne. Please stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay right where you are. Thank you very much for listening. And we're back. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. And I have with me today Mr. Jake Towne, who is running for Congress as an independent in the 15th District north of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Ms. Megan O'Toole, who is a graduate student at Pittsburgh State University in Kansas. And both of these fine people are graduates of Mises University, so they're very well-versed in Austrian economics, which I... listeners are going to recognize that I repeatedly refer to as reality economics, because reality is not optional. And we were talking a minute ago about rationing, higher cost, longer wait, fewer choices as a result of government intervention in healthcare. Why would these happen, Megan?
Well, first of all, I would like to refer back to a talk that Walter Block gave at the Mises University, and he pointed out an example of what happened in Canada, a letter he received about a woman who owns a horse ranch, and she encountered this predicament where she had to wait 18 months to get treatment for a kidney problem that if she had, one of her horses had it, then they would have had to have received immediate treatment. Otherwise, she would have been accused of abusing her horses.
That's right.
Walter Block basically said that he thought that, and I agree with him, that basically the U.S. government should be left to things like manufacturing paper clips and thumbtacks, just so that they don't mess it up.
I kind of like paper clips. I don't want to have a shortage of those, though.
Yeah, I like paper clips too. But I mean, the point is, I mean, we're dealing with human life,
right?
And human life is not valued. And human life, you know, a politician may try to convince you that they're being compassionate by enacting legislature that will help the poor and the needy, but at the same time, you have to think, what are their motives for doing that? Why don't they just go out themselves and start a charity?
One of the biggest comments that we hear repeatedly is the lack of health insurance, that people are not covered in health insurance. But
mm-hmm.
This assumes that more coverage is automatically going to equal better health care.
Right.
Now, why is that a logical fallacy?
Well, it's a logical fallacy because many of these people, first of all, are people my age who probably don't even need health care, and they don't want to pay for it unless they may need it in the future, but they don't want to pay for it right now. And if you make everyone pay, then the quality will actually go down because everyone else is paying for costs that don't even involve them, that go towards... and I think you're going to get into HAPA later on, but he says that it's a breeder of diseases. It actually encourages people with worse health to seek out health insurance and to bring the costs up for everyone.
In other words, if things are are viewed as being free, mm-hmm. demand will exceed supply.
Yeah, and there is really no such thing as free healthcare, you know. And as further in that quote by Adrian Rogers that Jake has on his website, you cannot multiply wealth by dividing it, you know. And when half of the people get the idea that they do not have to work because the other half is going to take care of them, and the other half gets the idea that it does no good to work because someone else is going to get what they work for, that, my dear friend, is the end of any nation.
So, Jake, now, the idea of more insurance, does that automatically equate to people being able to have a doctor when they need it?
No, and, I mean, it's been said, but I'll restate it, because coverage, it doesn't mean a doctor or a hospital room waiting for you when you need one. I mean, individual cases always vary, but overall, a system where you have socialized medicine, you do have longer wait times to get to doctors, even if you have this quote-unquote universal coverage. But whenever the government is funding the coverage, whenever you have the state doing it, what you end up having is less actual health care and also less access to it for the reasons that we stated before, namely price signals being destroyed, government-sponsored monopolies, a lot of waste, bureaucracy. And a lot of those actually came about. This is another thing that people don't realize is the government has already put in place the current healthcare system, because a lot of these folks that I talk to, they complain about the current insurance agencies, they complain about basically the HMOs. And the HMOs started in 1973 under Nixon. And what's great is they actually have a line, they actually have this line on tape that came out during Watergate. And it's basically his advisor telling him, well, you know, the HMOs, they'll give you less medical care. The less care you give them, the more money they make and the more profits they make. And, you know, that's exactly what the HMO has put in place. So, you know, the Congress passed this, actually, I believe it was sponsored by the Senator Ted Kennedy, who recently passed away, unfortunately. And this HMO Act, well, it was unfortunate that he died, but the HMO Act itself, is kind of an abomination, and that actually kind of really started eating into, along with Medicare, the free market in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the professors at Mises University, and by the way, I want to plug Mises.org, that's Mises.org, as probably the premier resource for understanding a lot of these issues. They have fantastic lectures on tape, and many books are available free of charge to download or to read online. Also, our website, radiofreemarket.com, has a number of resources I recommend. And it looks like we're going to come into another break. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about the four-step solution to healthcare, friends. So please stay on the line. This is Michael McKay at Radio Free Market, and we will be back right after the break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Radio Free Market, and this is Michael McKay, and I have as our special guest this week Mr. Jake Towne and our special commentator, Ms. Megan O'Toole. And we're talking about healthcare, and we were just talking about a four-step solution to healthcare that was presented by Professor Hans Hermann Hoppe. And I'm going to list these four steps. They're going to sound very radical to you, our listeners, because they're very much out of the box, but as we delve into them, I think you're going to find them to be quite important for all of us to understand. First is to eliminate licensing requirements. We're going to talk about what they get replaced with. Eliminate the FDA and government restrictions on the production and sale of pharmaceuticals. Deregulation of the insurance industry is number three, and the elimination of subsidies to the sick and unhealthy. So let's go back to this first one, because this is kind of a eyebrow raiser. The elimination of licensing requirements. Basically, how could we possibly eliminate licensing requirements and make that work, Jake?
Well, I guess I should go a little bit into my personal history. I have a family member who's in the medical profession as pretty much a doctor, physician's assistant. And I myself was a licensed emergency medical technician for, I guess, about eight or nine years, roughly.
Uh-huh.
And as an emergency medical technician, pretty much it's an ambulance driver and commits CPR and treat people, deliver babies and that type of thing, which I didn't have to do. But on the license for that, how the process works and how all these licenses works, even if you happen to be a lawyer, is you get licensed through the state. And you have they have a requirements and set up, and you go through and you take standardized tests and, you know, pass or fail. But, you know, it's all done by the state, and to some degree it's actually using state and tax revenues to operate. And it's kind of, you know, HAPA's idea is very, very interesting. And really what his vision is that, you know, not that there's completely no licensing whatsoever, but it's all voluntary licensing. So
I think it's actually, I think we have to define the difference between a license, which is something that is awarded by a state, and a voluntary accreditation that is provided by a competing agency. Because, you know, if you could, I mean, we have right now in the United States today, we have non-governmental agencies that actually do provide some protections to the consumers. Underwriter Laboratories is number one. You know, you look at that, they're the ones that put their little UL on the electrical things. That doesn't come from the federal government. You know, there's dispute resolution between Visa and MasterCard versus the court system we could talk about, things of that nature. So, Let's talk about the difference between, you know, licensing on one hand, which is where the government gets involved, and
right,
voluntary, you know, certifications and accreditations, which no one would disagree is a good idea.
Right, and really you kind of hit the nail on the head, because if you have competing agencies out there, then they'll always be increasing their standards, and they'll also be just the way the free market works, they'll be dropping costs at the same time. And what you'll really end up doing is, you know, to the extent that the consumers care about the reputation, like, oh, you know, this person is accredited by, you know, Underwriter Laboratories for doctors or what have you, or this way, you can set up different agencies, and then you can run itself. And the best part is, you know, you don't have the government involved. And, you know, I like to bring up something called the Nirvana fallacy. And the Nirvana fallacy is, okay, we have a problem that exists, and why do we believe that the government can actually solve it? They have a very, very, look at Medicare and Medicaid and healthcare right now. They're going to be going broke in within the next decade, period. Like, we need to prepare for it. So, you know, as a politician, we need to start transferring away from the state, look for free market solutions that are cost effective, will increase care and lower costs.
Well, one of the things that concerns me most about this whole licensing versus voluntary accreditations issue, which is really off the radar of most people, is that people don't typically understand that when you get into government licensing, what you're really talking about is the government using its power of force to set up a monopoly. And you can have a localized monopoly, which we could call a cartel. And that's basically what we have in medicine right now, because there is vast restrictions on even the number of people that can get into medical school. As I understand it, the AMA restricts a 20-to-1 entry into medical school. And that is to produce what? A protection for salaries for doctors, which are much higher on average. It's $160,000 or more as of 2002. And, you know, compare that, for example, to biologists or veterinarians who get about a third as much. And my personal feeling is that if you're smart enough to be a vet or a research biologist, you're probably smart enough to be a doctor. You know, so these artificial restrictions actually increase costs by reducing the supply of available doctors, in our society. And again, this is a particular point that is off the radar of most people. So let's not, you know, go ahead and focus on that too much more. We can come back to that later, but let's talk briefly about deregulation of the insurance industry, because insurance, in my opinion, is the thing I hear most. When people say, oh, we have a health insurance, a healthcare problem, usually one of the next words that come out of their mouth is insurance. people are underinsured. There's this fallacy of thinking that everybody gets insured, everybody is healthier, everybody's covered, everybody's happy, and so on and so forth. People are ignoring that there are 1,300 companies in the United States today that actually provide health insurance. But they're not allowed to offer it across state lines. Now do the math. That means that you take 1,300 companies that have to basically do business differently in 50 states, even if they choose to do so, that would equate to 65,000 different entities, with each company having to have the infrastructure of 50 different companies, 50 different risk pools, 50 sets of regs, 50 sets of lawyers, and that equals gross inefficiency. And that's going to increase higher insurance costs. And guess who that's passed on to? The consumers. So, you know, it's a complete bogus conversation, and people aren't talking about this reality that if we were to merely eliminate the licensing monopoly that doctors have and that the American Medical Association has over medical schools, and we were to allow insurance companies to compete across state lines, that alone would have a fantastic effect at lowering costs for consumers. Megan, would you like to comment on that?
Yes, I would just have to say that there's a really great book I'd like to recommend by Dr. Jane Orient, and she talks about just the craziness of trying to work with these health insurance companies because of the HMOs. It's called Your Doctor Is Not In by Dr. Jane Orient, and it was written in the 90s when the Clinton administration was trying to promote their health care bill. And it actually weighs in on a lot of what's going on right now with the Obamacare, and gives you a good history on that from a physician's perspective, and definitely has a lot of more expertise than what I can provide. And I would recommend it because she argues that a free market would bring the best possible medical care to the greatest number of people at the lowest possible cost, which is actually the opposite of what they're trying to say that a free market does.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely would have to say that I don't think that forcing everyone to pay for other people's health insurance is going to make costs go down.
I wanted to come back to this point that you brought up earlier in the show, Jake, because what Megan just pointed out, it touches on a concept called the risk pool. And in insurance today, basically, we don't get to choose which risk pool that we're thrown into. I mean, if you smoke, or if you, you know, jump out of airplanes, or if you're a professional football player or a scuba diver, you're going to pay more for insurance. That's typical. But the basic pool, the basic kind of coverage, you're still thrown in with people that, you know, the insurance company is trying to cover, you know, things that are completely irrelevant to you. And you mentioned, I think you said 18 to 40% of the premium doesn't have anything to do with the average person that's involved in that particular risk pool. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, that is correct. And that's something that I learned recently, and I'll be adding actually to my, I verified it. I have a contact in the area who works in the health insurance agency and in the industry, and verified it with them, and it's completely correct. I'll be putting that actually into my platform. Maybe I'll do that actually today. But if you go to townforcongress.com and search for, that's T-O-W-N-E for congress.com, search for healthcare platform, it'll bring that report up. And at the bottom of the article is a pretty comprehensive list of sources for people to go through and decide. But, you know, portability over state lines that you brought up is very important. And a lot of folks in the U.S. still get their, like the average working man gets, which is what I was doing. I was an engineer for 8 years before this. You get your insurance through the employer. And while I defend the right of, you know, employers to basically try to attract the top employees through the best health care plans, the fact of the matter is, like, it's tied to your job and it goes to this HMO system, and you pretty much get, every year you renew it. And one of the problems that comes up in this government-sponsored program is, let's say, you know, tomorrow I have a heart attack. When I come up for reinsurance, they might deny it and say, you know, you have a pre-existing condition.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, you know, it does put you in a different risk category, like you said. But what the free market could develop and could bring, if everyone will think outside of the box again just for a moment, if you have the government outside of it, if you have these HMOs outside of it, and the consumer wants to, you know, have their health care insured for a long period of time, there's nothing to prevent an industry from attempting to offer multi-year contracts, whether, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. People start off, you know, okay, let's say I'm 30 years old, I want to start, you know, a health care plan for, you know, 20 years, and I'm pretty much, I pay the same premium throughout the entire time. If I have a heart attack, you don't have to worry about this premium hopping up. But, you know, it still takes money away from that pool that you're paying into. So like Megan was saying, you know, there is no free lunch. There is no such thing as free health care.
Right.
But that's the whole idea of insurance, is individuals banding together with pools of capital to assist them.
Let me jump in here and add one more dimension to this idea of if the insurance industry was deregulated. In other words, if the government quit telling the insurance industry what they could do, meaning, what they must do, then we'll call those mandates, and what they cannot do, which are called restrictions, of course, then we would see features in their offerings like we can't even imagine right now. I mean, today, it's kind of like we have, I could use this analogy, we have a car that basically has a steering wheel and an accelerator and wheels. and what we can't even imagine right now is that due to the competition that would be required, and by the way, would be readily available. I mean, heck, there's 1,300 companies already willing to, you know, compete in this thing. You would be sure to have, you know, a lot of features come out of the woodwork. We would have the equivalent of all kinds of things, you know, tilted seats, heated seats, you know, various different entertainment options, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people could pay for those or not pay for those according to their particular needs and desires. And so the market always responds with greater choices for people. And people choose those, and those are the signals that the people then who are running these companies use to decide, well, what they want to offer to everyone. So, you know, it's a very practical kind of approach that when you think it through, you know, these particular restrictions that are imposed on people, which, by the way, most people don't even know exist. Most people aren't aware of this restriction on health insurance providers. It really could make a very giant difference in how we would operate. You know, I want to spend a couple of minutes while we still have just a little bit of time left in the show to talk a little bit about how we got here. You know, most folks don't remember or even know that it was Harry Truman back in 1945 that actually sent a message to Congress asking for the legislation establishing a national health care insurance plan. And 2 decades later, on July 30th, 1965, then ex-President Truman was the first to enroll in what just got passed as Medicare, part of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, which, of course, as of right now, we know is creating an incredible amount of unfunded liabilities to the tune of many, you know, trillions of dollars. In fact, between Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, we're looking at bankrupting the entire United States, according to the GAO, and you can look this up, the Government Accounting Office, in their fiscal wake-up tour. So then we go to 1973, the HMOs, and so on. Every particular step of government intervention has taken us further and further away from the doctor-patient relationship, where we paid for our routine exams, and we maybe had insurance, which most people did not, or catastrophic kind of insurance. So this is, you know, based on my study, the, you know, general overview of this. I'd like either of you or both of you to comment on that, right away.
Well, after that brief history, you know, it really puts it into perspective. I would have to say, and going back to what Walter Block says in his lecture, he comments that we definitely have a market for bread and other types of groceries, and restaurants take advantage of people's hunger. So why not go ahead and take advantage of people's needs for health care? I mean, it's not wrong. It's
yeah,
not
the
morally
we should
wrong.
Maybe have food socialism.
Yeah, I mean, we can have bread lines and rationing. I mean, that would be basically the equivalent of what we would have if we had it for health care.
Because food's too important for us to figure out on our own.
We need food, just like we need health care. People will die without food. Some people will die without health care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a question of, is it the government's responsibility, moral responsibility, to make sure that everyone's healthy? And the answer is really no, it's not.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the objections that we see about this idea of health care is that, well, you know, people should not take advantage of other people's needs. But, you know, like you just say, food is a need that we have, and as is health care. So, folks, please stay tuned. We're going to come back after a couple more minutes of a break, and we'll have Megan O'Toole and Jake Towne talking on Radio Free Market on health care. And this is Michael McKay, your host. So please stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. Thank you very much. And welcome back. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. And today I have Jake Towne and Megan O'Toole. We're talking about healthcare, and we were just talking about a brief history of government intervention in healthcare. And you know, as we've been talking about this topic for the last hour, it seems like there's a recipe of several ingredients that actually we can point to that actually all have significantly contributed to the increased costs that everyone has, the problem that we have in healthcare, the problem that we see in healthcare that is, you know, very much in everybody's focus right now. And I list basically three things that are most significant. One is increased government intervention, insurance companies not being able to compete across state lines, and this monopoly or cartelization of the medical professions and professionals and medical schools. So, Jake, I want to throw it to you. What do you think?
Well, you know, hearing that whole history, which I'm pretty familiar with, although I wasn't alive at that time, through Medicaid in 65 and the HMO Act in 1973, I'd like to point out that, you know, one of the really crucial things to also remember is inflation and the currency. Because what you hear a lot of these days, like sometimes actually more on the Republican side than the Democratic side, but a Republican politician might sound, you know, all fiscally conservative and everything for a while, but they never, save for Congressman Ron Paul, what you never hear is them talking about a sound currency.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they don't is because they use inflation to steal your purchasing power away.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been happening over time, like, you know, we used to have a monetary system based on gold and silver, and a silver dime in 1965 could buy a loaf of bread, and a silver dime today, you take it to a jeweler, get the cash for it, and still buy the same loaf of bread. So something's been happening to that money. And what's been happening to the money is it gets diluted by the creation of new dollars by the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And when as this has been occurring, what you see is, you know, the price of health care, which is a good and a commodity and a service all wrapped up together, is going up higher every year. But, and so is your salary, but the inflation rate of the good and the commodity and the service for healthcare is increasing at a faster rate than people's salaries. So every year you spend a higher percentage of your salary on healthcare. So it is getting more expensive in the sense that it's taking up a higher percentage of your salary. But in reality, you're getting poorer.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting poorer because the government is taking away your purchasing power directly from your wallet because your money is not tied to anything except for worthless treasury bonds and Federal Reserve notes.
Well, you know, and the other thing is that if you go back to 1975 and you look at what the cost of a color television set was then and what the cost of a color television set is today, it's about the same in terms of actual dollars. And in terms of inflation, it costs much, much, much less. And yet we have many, many more features. We have flat screen TVs and so on and so forth. And that's because why? There are no real restrictions, government restrictions on the production of these things that amount to anything. And so in healthcare, as in anything else, what we want are personal choices, higher quality, lower prices, and that's what we're all looking for. And the government solutions boil down to fewer choices and lower quality and higher costs, which are then all transferred to the taxpayers, all of us. So in any case, we're going to have to wrap it up today. It's unfortunate that we are running out of time. I want to thank you, Jake Towne, for being with us, and Ms. Megan O'Toole for being with us today. And this is Michael McKay on Radio Free Market. Please visit us on the web at radiofreemarket.com, and we'll talk to you next week when we have Dr. Yuri Maltsev talking about socialism and its effects on American culture. Talk to you then. Thank you very much for listening.